I will immediately turn the floor over to Maurice Strong, who's an old friend of yours and all of us, and who is Secretary General of the 1992 United Nations Conference on Environment and Development. And he will make whatever remarks he wishes and introduce our guest of honor today. Maurice?
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Sills, and thank all of you. As you know, I've been had the privilege of meeting with you many times over the years, and in several capacities, but never have I felt a greater sense of pleasure and privilege than this morning, when I have the opportunity of introducing to you someone who needs no introduction, but who I introduce in his new capacity, our distinguished Edson Arantes do Nascimento. You probably don't know so well as his other name, Pele. I introduce him with great pleasure to you this morning as the Goodwill Ambassador for the Earth Summit. I can't think of anyone on our planet who can more appropriately play this role as Ambassador for the Earth Summit. He is a universal man, but he's rooted in Brazil. He's a Brazilian. And the conference, as you know, will be held in Rio de Janeiro. There's no one who has inspired more excitement, more confidence, more trust than Pelé. He is not only world's greatest soccer player, but that alone would have commanded great respect. But his human qualities, his commitment to people and to the planet, really distinguish him as a true citizen of our Earth. And I won't recite your distinguished career. It is so well known around the world. But I cannot conceal my pleasure and my excitement to be able to introduce you here as Ambassador to the Earth Summit. And I know that my friends in the media here would be far more interested in hearing from you than from me at this point. So I want to extend in this presence my gratitude to you for taking on this assignment. And I know that people all over the world who admire you are going to hear from you about the importance to them of the Earth Summit. Thank you.
Thank you very much. It's a new team for me, this, because I think when we start to talk about play in only one team. Always when you have a tournament, as I used to, to be in all my life, always you have opponents. I think the world, all the people in the world, should join this team, because I think it's a very, very important, to know that. To me, it's a big responsibility, but we pass in life, we pass. We stay here for a short period. Then we must to give something for the people who come after us. I think this is a moment, because we are, in a very, very delicate moment to the world. And I think this is the moment to try, to do something. And that is the reason who I accept, participate and work and play in this team, Mr. Strong. Thank you very much. I know it's a big responsibility, but I think we should do, our best. Thank you very much.
May I just say, you will notice this little emblem. You haven't probably seen much of it. You will see it a lot, because we hope that our distinguished ambassador will display this in many parts of the world.
Thank you. Thank you very much. And we'll have the first question from the representative of the UN Correspondents Association, Ted.
Mr. Strong, Ambassador Pele, I welcome you on behalf of the UN Correspondents Association. And this briefing will have to last approximately 15 minutes. We're getting a little start, but we have another briefing at noon. Mr. Strong, first question. There has been some criticism of the idea that there perhaps isn't enough of an element of population consideration in the agenda of the conference. Could you expand on that?
Yes, the agenda, the specific list of items to be considered by the conference was, as you will know, agreed by the General Assembly in 1989 in the resolution 44228. It didn't specifically mention a number of issues like energy and population, which are intrinsic to the whole environment development relationship. But at the first preparatory committee, I raised the question of the need to address the population issue. The preparatory committee agreed with me, and you will find, if you look at the documents for our preparatory committee meeting that begins in August, that the population issue is pervasive. I have a senior population advisor. But remember, it's not treated as an individual issue in itself, because there's going to be a whole UN conference on population. But it's treated as part of the nexus of relationships between population, development, and environment, rather than just population per se. And the same with energy. Energy is another issue that pervades virtually every aspect of the program, and we're treating them in that manner. But I believe when you look at the way in which they're treated, I'm not saying you'll agree with every detail, but you'll see they're being given central attention.
Mr. Pelik, can you specify the activities you expect to participate in on behalf of Earth Summit?
We just met today, because I just arrived today for this meeting. And then next week, we're going to get together with Mr. Strong's staff and my staff. Then we're going to see all the detail, you know, and the traveling. But the base is to travel some country all over the world, as I used to do normally, you know, to travel all over the world with this message, you know. This is the principle. But the details we're going to see next week.
What can you are going to do regarding the destruction of the Amazonas in Brazil, as ambassador of the?
This is a good question because even for the Brazilian people, when they decide to do the conference in Rio de Janeiro, all the Brazilian people, or almost 95% of the Brazilian people, they think will be, you know, all in favor of Brazil. You know? But sometimes the decision was not like that. Then we have to advise to the Brazilian people, you know, because this conference is not only for, you know, to discuss about Amazon, to discuss about all the people all over the world. This is more important.
This is directed to Mr. Strong. Could you tell us something about the PrepCom in August? What you expect to accomplish? The goals and objectives on target?
Yes, this is a very key preparatory committee meeting. Up to date, we've been discussing primarily the analysis of the issues. This time, the preparatory committee will have before it a whole series of what we call options for action, for inclusion in Agenda 21. Some of them will be pretty difficult because, as you know, some of the issues are still not subject to consensus, and one of the reasons for the conference is to try and produce agreement on some very difficult issues. So I expect the preparatory committee to be a real negotiating session. Now, we can't expect the issues to be resolved at the preparatory committee. The process is going to continue right up until the conference. But I do expect that this preparatory committee will narrow significantly the options for action and will clearly instruct us as its secretariat as to where to concentrate our efforts in the period between this meeting and the final meeting that will take place in New York next March. So this is, in my view, the kind of bridging session the session that will go where we will move from analysis and discussion to definition of the specific actions that will be put in front of the governments in Rio. It won't be an easy session, but the spirit that we built up from the beginning now, is a good spirit. And even the most difficult issues, I hope, will be tackled in a pretty good spirit. The one thing that has encouraged me very much, even though the preparatory committee process is a slow one by nature with 160 governments, but we have established a good internal dynamics, I think, and a real commitment to the importance of the issues. And I hope that will serve us well when we get down to some of the tough negotiations in August.
Since the issue of energy is one of the most important factors in the environmental problems, why isn't it on the agenda?
Well, you'll have to ask the General Assembly exactly why they created an agenda like they did. But, however, in doing it, they did, in fact, they had in mind that there are certain key sectoral issues like atmosphere. There's several different ways of stating issues, and they chose to state them, by atmosphere, by oceans, by land resources, etc., which is perfectly fine. You have to choose some way. But in doing it that way, you bring into play all of the issues, that what they call cross-sectoral issues, which they recognized in the resolution, have to be dealt with in respect of all the issues. So energy is a pervasive issue, cutting across all the others, and that's what they called cross-sectoral issue. And so is food security. A number of the key issues, population, are key issues that really touch and have to be dealt with in each one of the other agenda items. It's always difficult to in complex issues like that to select the best way of listing them, and they selected this way. But that doesn't mean that the others are not included. In fact, it requires you to include them, not just as an individual item, but as a pervasive cross-sectoral item.
Mr. Strong, since the implementation of all plans of action will require the support of the world leaders, the political base, how are you going to include, to provide the support of those world leaders in this environmental question and development and the environment?
Well, first of all, the world leaders are increasing numbers, committing themselves to come to the conference. So when you've got them there, there's a pretty good chance that they're going to feel a strong incentive to do something. Now, the G7, in their communique, which I'm sure you all read, made some very positive references to the commitment of the seven leaders to the conference. That, I think, was very encouraging. But let's face it, the kind of changes that have to be agreed in Rio are very fundamental changes. They'll be difficult. Fundamental change is never easy. That's why we need the conference. If it was all going to be easy, there wouldn't have been a need for the conference. The whole purpose of a UN conference of this kind is to provide special political focus and energy on issues that are not moving adequately in the normal course. And we're going to try to make sure they will move in Rio.
How many leaders are going to join this conference?
160 are being invited, the presidents or prime ministers of every country in the world. A galaxy of other leading citizens and grassroots constituencies. A great number of leaders have now said they're coming. We hope that number will grow. Some of them have told us privately, others have said it publicly. John Major and Prime Minister Kaifu both said in London that they were coming. Mr. Gorbachev has said that he was coming. There are a large number of leaders that have said either publicly or privately that they are coming, and that number, I'm sure, will grow in the period ahead. So we'll have the right people there to make decisions. Whether they'll make the right decisions remains to be seen.
My question, I hope the decision will be good for Brazil.
Absolutely, it must be. That's right.
Sometimes the decision was not so good for Brazil. No?
That's true.
You never know.
True. But that is an interesting thing. That's why I attach so much value to Mr. Pelle's willingness to help us, because this is an Earth summit, but the summit doesn't exist up in the clouds, detached from everything else. The base of the summit are the people of this planet. And we want to make sure that when the leaders go to Rio, they know that their people understand what is at stake and are going to hold them accountable. That's why the work he's doing with people is going to be so important to the political success of this conference.
Yeah, because I think we, you know, because we are people too. We must to know and to pressure them. You know,
absolutely.
Other questions?
No, but there's no question. May I ask? Willy Brandt, who heads the Stockholm Initiative, has proposed that the 1992 conference be the venue of a world summit of leaders for an independent commission on global governance. A, is that likely to happen? And should it happen, would that make the 1992 conference on the same level as other historic conferences of the 1940s, such as San Francisco and Bretton Woods?
Well, I was part of that same Stockholm Initiative group. And basically what they did recognize that the Rio conference, the Earth Summit, is in fact to be a meeting of world leaders, and that the issues they will deal with are very much related to the governance issues that they discussed at Stockholm. But they called for the conference to focus especially on those governance issues, which it will. The institutional issues, the governance issues are very important to the results of that conference. But I don't want to be pretentious, but I do believe that this conference has to be historic. First of all, it is the first time that there has ever been a formally mandated world summit conference. The Children's Conference, which was a great event and from which we will learn a lot, but it was a little different. It was a short, very, very highly visible and very useful event. But it was called by the heads of six governments. It wasn't formally mandated by the UN. So this will be the first global summit conference ever mandated as such. And if in my view, its success is going to be difficult to achieve. But whether it succeeds or fails, and I think failure is unthinkable, but it will be a great historic event, and it will be one of the most important events of our times. The people say, "Well, what do you think? Why are you so optimistic?" Well, I'm a realist. I'm a pretty practical person, but I believe we'll succeed because we have to succeed. There is no option, and if we don't, when in our times will we get the leaders of all the countries in the world to get together again to address these issues? And will it not be too late by the time we wait for another opportunity, which might not come for a generation? So it will be an historic event, and that's why we have to do everything possible to ensure that during this process of build-up to it, the people of the world understand the importance of the decisions to be taken there, and that the power of the people is behind the leaders who assemble at the summit, that the summit isn't just detached from its base.
You've suggested there's no consensus, or the issues on which there's no consensus. Could you spell out one or two of the principal points of conflict, and specifically how the two sides in the conflict, what causes the conflict?
Well, some of the key issues: climate change, biodiversity, forests. In all of these, there's a constructive process of negotiation underway, but positions are very, very different. They haven't yet come together. What is important is that they're all there at the table trying to resolve these difficulties. They basically revolve around a number of issues. One is the willingness of the countries of the North to undertake specifically to reduce their own, in the case of climate change, their own emissions, which means significant changes in their own economy and their own patterns of energy use. Also, the need for the North to place real value on the services that the South, the developing countries, are performing by absorbing greenhouse gases, by providing so much of the world's biodiversity, which has been treated as a free good, and we now have to realize it's one of our most precious assets and give it some value. We have to have a new arrangement between developing and industrialized countries that will recognize that the world needs them. After all, that's more than 3/4 of the world, in order to protect our common future, and that we have to have a new deal for the developing countries. And these issues are, you know, whether it be forestry, whether it be biodiversity, whether it be climate change, whether it be the ocean issues or the waste disposal, toxic chemicals issues, this issue of equity and cooperation between North and South and a new deal for the South is central to all of them, and it's the toughest issue we face.
Well, could you explain what you mean by a new deal for the developing world?
Yeah. Go ahead.
Okay. A new deal for the developing world, in short, means that we recognize that they share the risks of our global civilization with us, the risks largely created by us under the polluter pays principles. We in the North are those who have contributed most to those risks, and we must bear a much greater share of the responsibility. We must, first of all, we must understand that a global attack on poverty is as essential from the environmental point of view as it is from the moral, humanitarian, and development point of view. That we have to reverse the net outflow of resources from developing countries, which is completely paralyzing their own ability to revitalize their economies. How can we expect them to move to environmentally sound and sustainable practices if they're being starved of the resources they need? And they should get these resources not as in the past as a matter of indulgence or charity, but as a matter of our exercise of our responsibility towards them and recognizing the essential functions that the developing countries have to play in global cooperation to save our planet, and how these functions are tied directly to their own development aspirations and needs. So that the link between environment and development is the key. And the need to assist the developing countries to revitalize their development and at the same time join us in protecting the global environment simply requires that the North act decisively to create a massive new support for the developing countries out of the Rio Conference.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. They got to me on some of these.